Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow, saying the U.S. seeks to discredit Russia's leadership. A new report says hundreds of Native American children have died in U.S. state-run boarding schools due to physical abuse and other forms of punishment. Also ahead, Iran's foreign minister says people in the West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's relations with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Thank you for joining us. Our top story this hour, Russia's foreign intelligence chief accuses Washington of spreading Nazi-style propaganda against Moscow. Sergei Naryshkin says the U.S. encourages the spreading of fake information on the popular Telegram messaging service. He said the U.S. seeks to discredit and, quote, dehumanize Russia's political and military leadership in the eyes of Russian people. Naryshkin also compared the U.S. State Department to the infamous Nazi propaganda machine run by Joseph Goebbels. The U.S. State Department rejected the Russian official's, quote, incredibly ironic statements. The department accused Moscow of long-standing state-sponsored disinformation and propaganda efforts. Russia has imposed sanctions on over 30 EU, US, and Singaporean energy companies in retaliation for Western bans on Moscow. The blacklisted firms include Gazprom Germania, a former subsidiary of Russia's major gas exporter Gazprom, Europol Gas, which owns the Polish part of the Yamal-Europe gas pipeline, is also among the sanctioned companies. The sanctions include a ban on transactions and the entry into Russian ports of vessels linked to the affected companies. The list published by Russia doesn't provide further details of the sanctions. Under a presidential decree issued earlier this month, no Russian entity is allowed to make deals with sanctioned parties or fulfill its obligations under existing agreements. The U.S. and its allies have imposed several rounds of sanctions against Moscow in response to the war in Ukraine. Russia had repeatedly warned that it would retaliate for the Western sanctions in kind. Now, a new poll shows that the average French person's life is being drastically impacted by runaway inflation. Coming after years of far-right economic austerity, the French economy now appears to be on the brink of major trouble. Rami Mazahari has more from Paris.
France is a nation of 67 million people, and 40 million of them earn less than 2,000 euros per month. A new poll reveals that skyrocketing inflation is wreaking unprecedented havoc on their lives. The poll says that after bills are paid, 20 million Frenchmen have less than 100 euros in the bank by the 10th of each month. It's not a new problem. Perhaps the primary slogan of the Yellow Vest movement has been a cry of the end of the month.
For us delivery drivers, the price of gas has put us in a very difficult condition. I spent almost 60% more on petrol than I used to, and every day now. Of course, it's not just petrol. Everything else has gotten more expensive too. The state has to lower taxes.
A stunning 95% of those earning less than 2,000 euros per month are worried about inflation. Two-thirds say they are struggling to get by. Half say they have insomnia over financial worries. And 80% of households with children fear they will fall into poverty.
Everything is more expensive, and all my friends and I talk about it. Even the cost of something basic, like cooking oil, has gotten dramatically more expensive. We hope things will somehow get better, but for now, things are quite tight.
New official data says prices will jump 5.4% in June, in the largest monthly increase since 1985. The next 2 months will also see further increases, and combined with near-recession levels of economic growth. After years of no-strings-attached quantitative easing and zero-interest-rate policies for the rich, interest rates are now being hiked just when the average person most needs some credit. The failure to invest years of this so-called free money into societally productive investments means the real economy has suffered from long-running neglect at the expense of high finance, real estate, and stocks. Deeply unpopular austerity cuts have also worsened the condition of the real economy, put even more costs on the average person's back, and left France poorly equipped for what seems like the latest Western financial crisis. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
The European Commission proposes to establish a new EU agency to tackle the growing problem of child sex abuse in the 27-nation bloc. Unveiling the plan, the Commission says reports of such abuse in the EU have increased by 6,000% during the past decade. Jerome Hughes has the details from Brussels.
Many believe the crime of sexually abusing a child is even more heinous than murder. The EU's executive arm, the European Commission, says 85 million child sex abuse videos and images were identified by the bloc's authorities last year, a record number.
In the EU, the reports related to the European Union, the member states, have increased with 6,000% the last 10 years. Why is this increasing? Of course, nobody knows for sure.
The Commission says it's not known exactly why these crimes are on the rise, but analysts say the EU has been allowed to expand too quickly, with some nations harbouring criminal gangs.
And now, of course, thanks to or due to open borders, are these criminal networks, they started to flourish and integrate further.
The EU Commission is proposing to establish a new agency designed to prevent child sex abuse and support victims.
At least one in five children falls victim to sexual violence during childhood in Europe. So these numbers are really embarrassing.
Anti-trafficking agencies say 2 million children recently entered the EU having fled the conflict in Ukraine, many of them unaccompanied. Gangs and individuals see an opportunity for exploitation.
The police and child protection services need to work together, plus they need to work together across borders, and there need to be better information sharing platforms.
The European Commission has a message for predators.
We are coming for you.
But critics are asking why more has not been done up to now. Given that it promotes itself as a project designed to protect and improve the lives of citizens, rights groups say this issue seriously undermines the credibility of the European Union. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Now, a new report shows more than 500 Native American children have died in U.S. government-run boarding schools over a period of more than a century. The Department of Interior's report says indigenous children were exposed to physical abuse, food denial, and other forms of punishment in state-run boarding schools. It says the school system pursued the twin goals of cultural assimilation and territorial dispossession of indigenous peoples through relocation of their children. The study identified more than 400 such schools operating in the U.S. for 1.5 centuries, starting in the early 19th century. There are also more than 50 marked or unmarked burial sites. The deaths of 500 indigenous students were attributed to only 19 schools that have been investigated so far. The department says further investigation may increase the number of student deaths to thousands or even tens of thousands. Staying in the United States, where many families are facing a severe shortage of baby formula, which has sent them on a desperate hunt for the vital supplies. The shortage is particularly impacting mothers who cannot breastfeed and those whose children cannot tolerate other nutrition sources. Many mothers are watering down formula or rationing it. The problem is worse for mothers who lack health insurance or work at low-wage jobs with little opportunity to breastfeed. The situation got worse on February 17 when manufacturer Abbott recalled formula made at its Michigan factory. According to the data collection agency Data Assembly, 43% of the usual formula was out of stock across the U.S. last month. Iran's foreign minister says people in the West Asia region will never accept normalization of their country's ties with, quote, the terrorist and child-killing Israeli regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the comments in a meeting with the visiting Lebanese culture minister, Mohammad Wissam al-Murtada, in Tehran. The top Iranian diplomat added that the resistance of the Lebanese people in the face of Israel's frequent acts of aggression is a brilliant model for other regional nations. He said Tehran is ready to boost economic cooperation with Beirut despite the cruel Western sanctions. Al-Murtada, for his part, said Lebanon is prepared to expand relations with all friendly countries in the region, especially Iran. And Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps says it has destroyed the positions of terrorist groups operating in Iraq's semi-autonomous Kurdistan region. The IRGC's ground forces reportedly targeted the terrorist hideouts in the city of Erbil with artillery fire. There is no report of casualties and damage from the attack yet. The operation followed the arrest of a terrorist team planning to carry out sabotage attacks in western Iran. A statement says confessions made by detainees led to the operation on Wednesday morning. Iran has, time and again, warned Iraq's Kurdistan region that it reserves the right to hit terrorist groups operating in the region. In September last year, Iranian missiles destroyed four bases of hostile groups, and in March this year, the IRGC fired a dozen ballistic missiles at what it described as a secret base of the Israeli spy agency Mossad in Erbil. Israeli forces killed a reporter working for the Qatar-based Al Jazeera TV network in the occupied West Bank. Shireen Abu Aqla was fatally shot while covering an Israeli army raid on the occupied city of Jenin. She was a veteran Palestinian reporter for Al Jazeera's Arabic language channel. Palestinians have gathered in the city of Ramallah to pay tribute to her. Israeli officials say Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist, but another journalist accompanying Abu Aqla, who was also shot in the back, calls the Israeli claim an outright lie.
Palestinian reporter Shireen Abu Aqla was shot while covering an Israeli raid on the Jenin refugee camp in the occupied West Bank. The veteran reporter who worked for Al Jazeera's Arab language channel was shot in the face by Israeli forces despite wearing a blue flak jacket clearly marked with press. Israeli officials claim Palestinians may be responsible for the death of the 51-year-old journalist. But another reporter accompanying Abu Aqla, who was also shot in the back, rejected the Israeli claim as a lie.
The occupation is murderous and criminal. They shot us for no reason. We were shocked by the shooting. I was lucky and I turned my back when the first bullet was shot and injured my back. They wanted to kill me. I was injured in my back and the second bullet shot my colleague Shireen and caused her death. There were no armed people and we cannot put our lives in danger and say the wrong narrative. The Israeli army is a liar and criminal and despicable.
Al Jazeera also said Abu Aqla was assassinated in cold blood and urged the international community to hold Israeli forces responsible. The Palestinian Authority said Abu Aqla's killing is a heinous crime and part of the occupation's policy of targeting journalists to obscure the truth and commit crimes silently. In Gaza, the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas described the killing as a new crime against journalism in Palestine, while the Islamic Jihad movement branded it an unsuccessful attempt to cover up realities. The journalist's murder also drew widespread condemnation from countries across the world, such as Iran, Pakistan, and Belgium. Iran's foreign ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadeh called Abu Akleh's killing a deliberate and criminal act. The International Federation of Journalists said it would submit Abu Akleh's case to the International Criminal Court. Abu Akleh's murder is just the tip of the iceberg of crimes committed by Israel against journalists. Reporters Without Borders say nearly 150 Palestinian journalists have been wounded by Israeli forces across the Gaza Strip and the West Bank since 2018. Israeli strikes also destroyed a building housing local offices of media outlets during its last year's war on Gaza. Such atrocity, along with frequent raids and shootings in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip, show that the Israeli regime has no scruples about murdering unarmed Palestinians. The silence of the international community is also seen as a green light for Israel to continue such crimes.
Palestine's UN envoy says Arab countries at the UN have called for an independent international probe into Israel's killing of Palestinian journalist Shireen Abu Akleh.
The Arab group in New York adopted a statement condemning in the strongest possible term this criminal act by the Israeli occupying authorities and demanding an international independent investigation on this crime, and to take those who are responsible for this crime to face accountability regarding these crimes. Of course, you know, my colleague
Riyad Mansour said the demand for the probe into, quote, the assassination of the journalist was sent in identical letters to the UN chief Antonio Guterres, the Secretary General, the Secretary Council, that is, and the General Assembly's President. Meanwhile, the Office of the UN Human Rights Chief, Michelle Bachelet, also called for an independent and transparent investigation into the incident. Bachelet's office said it is appalled at the killing of the journalist. Well, that brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Colorado lawsuit charges group with questioning residents about voting status, while former U.S. President Donald Trump loyalists work to sustain falsehoods about his loss. We have prepared for you an article written by Peter Stone. The piece is titled, Groups Perpetuating Trump's 2020 Election Lie Face Scrutiny and Lawsuits. Conservative groups perpetuating Donald Trump's false charges that the 2020 election was rigged have sparked a lawsuit against one in Colorado and a congressional panel investigation of another in New Mexico over aggressive tactics used to seek out possible voter fraud. The scrutiny and criticism facing these conservative groups underscore how Donald Trump loyalists in several U.S. states are working to sustain falsehoods about Trump's election loss, while launching new drives that voting rights advocates say smack of voter intimidation, often targeting communities of color. A lawsuit was filed by the National Association for Advancement of Colored People, the NAACP, and two other groups in March of this year, charging that Colorado-based U.S. Election Integrity Plan, which has echoed Donald Trump's baseless claims about 2020 election fraud, has gone door-to-door in some counties, aggressively questioning residents about their voting status and sometimes bearing arms. Moreover, the House Committee on Oversight and Reform has been investigating EcoMail, a firm that helped push false claims of election fraud in Arizona, and has reportedly been paid $50,000 by a New Mexico county to oversee a local audit force doing intrusive door-to-door voter canvassing. Other states, including Michigan and Utah, boast conservative groups that, under the guise of protecting voting integrity by ferreting out fraud, have been criticized for the methods they employed in seeking out potential voter fraud. Danielle Lang, Senior Director of Voting Rights at the Nonpartisan Campaign Legal Center, said, "As Americans, we expect and demand an open and participatory democracy that welcomes all voters equally." She added, "Those engaging in these pressure tactics should know that voter intimidation is a crime with serious consequences." The lawsuit against U.S. Election Integrity Plan, filed by the NAACP in Colorado, the League of Women Voters in Colorado, and My Familiar Voter, charges that the U.S. Election Integrity Plan has engaged in door-to-door voter intimidation, including taking pictures of some houses in neighborhoods with a large number of minority residents. The lawsuit charges that the U.S. Election Integrity Plan, or USEIP, representatives have at times worn badges or carried firearms when visiting voters' residences, although they are not government officials. Beth Hendricks, The League of Women Voters executive director in Colorado told The Guardian, "We're very concerned about reports that Colorado voters have received visits at their homes from people sometimes openly armed, posing as government officials who imply, without evidence, that fraudulent voting activity occurred at their address." A Colorado judge recently rejected a motion by USEIP, the U.S. Election Integrity Plan, to dismiss the lawsuit. A separate motion by the plaintiff's two counsels, the nonprofit legal group Free Speech for People and the law firm Lathrop GPM, to obtain a preliminary injunction to halt U.S. Election Integrity Plan's efforts is pending. The lawsuit partly rests on a measure that passed after the Civil War, called the KKK Act or the Ku Klux Klan Act, aimed at stopping white terrorists from using violence to interfere with black voters. The Colorado-based U.S. Election Integrity Plan, or USEIP, which started after Joe Biden defeated Donald Trump, is run by Sean Smith, a retired Air Force colonel who also leads Cause of America, a nationwide group that boasts that its role is to enable, facilitate, and support citizen grassroots action to restore trust in local elections. Mike Lindell, the multimillionaire Trump loyalist, who is the chief executive officer of MyPillow, and has been the chief financier of Cause of America, told The Guardian that the group serves as an information hub with a presence in all 50 states and on his website, frankspeech.com. Mike Lindell estimated he has spent between $100,000 and $200,000 monthly for salaries for the group's employees, except for Smith, who is unpaid, and other expenses. Smith was reportedly tapped by Mike Lindell to run Cause of America last fall, after Smith attended a Lindell-organized cyber symposium last summer in South Dakota, which promoted conspiratorial and baseless claims of voting fraud in the 2020 presidential election. An organizing manual for the U.S. Election Integrity Plan thanks Mike Lindell, but he told The Guardian that he had no ties with it. Smith can be seen in a 39-second video clip in a large crowd of Trump loyalists who were at the Capitol during the 6th of January assault, and another photograph that was released by Colorado Newsline and relied on ProPublica research. Smith did not reply to emails sent to Cause of America seeking comment. Other outfits with track records for claiming the 2020 election was rigged have popped up in New Mexico, where ostensibly, in the name of ferreting out voting fraud, they have sparked concerns about intimidating voters in areas with large minority populations. Top Democrats on the House Committee on Oversight and Reform in March announced an investigation into charges from state officials that EcoMail was retained by Tiny Otero County to examine potential voting fraud, in part by overseeing a door-to-door voter canvass. The founder of EcoMail, V.A. Shiva Ayadurai, has been a frequent promoter of unfounded conspiracies about the 2020 presidential election results, as well as a Senate primary in Massachusetts that he lost. And the firm was also a subcontractor for a widely debunked Arizona audit of its largest county. According to records obtained and published by the watchdog group American Oversight, and first reported by NBC News, EcoMail's contract called for it to supervise a door-to-door voter canvass by a group called the New Mexico Audit Force, to check the accuracy of voter rolls. The company's contract also said it would inspect ballot images in the county and assess voter signatures for accuracy. The House Oversight Committee Chair, Carolyn Maloney, and the chair of its Subcommittee on Civil Rights and Civil Liberties, Jamie Raskin, wrote Ayadurai in March that it is investigating whether your company's audit and canvass in New Mexico interferes with Americans' right to vote by spreading disinformation about elections and by intimidating voters. The House letter pointed out that 40% of the county's residents are non-white Hispanic and raised the concern that the company's canvass could have a particular impact on minority communities in Otero County. Otero County, which has a population of 67,000 people, was won by Donald Trump by more than 25% of the vote in the 2020 presidential election. In response, B.A. Shiva Ayadurai denied Ikomei was playing any such role in Otero County and did not provide requested documents, promoting another letter to Ayadurai with evidence and statements from a New Mexico couple involved in the audit force. A committee spokesperson told The Guardian that Dr. Ayadurai has denied Ikomei's participation in the sham audit and canvass, directly contradicting statements made by leaders of the New Mexico audit force and raising serious doubts about his credibility. The spokesperson added the panel is now weighing its next moves to get to the bottom of this so-called audit and prevent other attacks on our elections. The Oversight Committee also wrote in March to Justice Department Assistant Attorney General Kirsten Clark of the Civil Rights Division to share his concerns about possible negative impacts of Ikomei's Otero County efforts. On a related voting front, Congresswoman Maloney told The Guardian in a statement that another investigation she launched recently with Congresswoman Zoe Loughran, the chair of the House Administration Committee, is looking into election disinformation in Arizona, Florida, Ohio, and Texas. This is a fight for our democracy, and I'm committed to finding solutions. Daniel Lang of the Campaign Legal Center stressed that groups trying to find fraud while harassing voters or spreading disinformation won't succeed and will be challenged. Lang said, "The right to vote is the bedrock of our society, and voters won't be bullied out of exercising their rights."
Food for thought.
Hello, everyone. Let us contemplate on a saying of Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him. O people, he who notices his own flaws will give up chasing others' flaws. And he who is satisfied with what Allah has endowed him will not be sad for what is in the hands of others.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Seventh Imam, Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salatu wa salam, is actually known as Bab al-Hawaij.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام خير الأمور أوسطها.
Ziyarah of Imam Musa ibn Ja'far al-Kazim alayhi salam.
As-salamu alayka ya Mawlai Musa ibn Ja'far wa rahmatullah.
This is Dialogue, a program on the famous conversations of Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome, dear listeners, and I'm your host, Mahdi. We're talking about the dialogues of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the direct descendant of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, and he was also the seventh divinely appointed Imam among the household of the Holy Prophet Muhammad. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led a life which was in balance and harmony with that of the Prophet Muhammad, his great-great-grandfather. His life and the life of Imam al-Kazim was in the line and the direction of the Prophet Muhammad. And of course, the life of Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam was a strict adherence and obedience of Islam in so many different ways, whether it was his ethics, his morals, his behaviors, his actions, his statements. We find that Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam was the copy of the Holy Prophet Muhammad of Islam, the messenger of Allah. Imam Musa al-Kazim alayhi salam led an upright, righteous, and noble life. These are his dialogues.
قال الإمام الكاظم عليه السلام ليس منا من لم يحاسب نفسه في كل يوم فإن عمل حسنا استزاد الله وإن عمل سيئا استغفر الله منها وتاب إليه.
Imam al-Kazim alayhi salam stated, the one who does not take account of himself every single day is not one of us. And when he performs a good deed, he should ask Allah to enable him to do more. And when he commits an evil deed, he must seek Allah's forgiveness and repent for it.
Welcome back, dear listeners. It's a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. Dear friends, when we're talking about the beautiful conversations and dialogues of Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, we find that His Eminence, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam, this divinely appointed Imam, he spoke to his companions in this one instance about supplication, about ad-du'a. And sometimes, dear friends, we think that, well, what is a supplication going to do for our lives? What is a dua going to do for our lives? What benefit do we have from prayers and dua? Well, Imam al-Kadhim alayhi salam speaks to his companion about supplication, and His Eminence says, adhere to supplication. For most surely, supplication and request from Allah repel tribulations, even if they are ordained and decreed, and nothing has remained but carrying it out. When Allah the Great and Almighty is supplicated and asks, it is Allah who turns away tribulation. So, dear friends, this is the benefit of the many countless benefits of supplication. And that is that when we supplicate to Allah, He turns away tribulations and calamities from us. And so when we request Allah, Imam al-Kadhim says, Allah repels these tribulations and these calamities from us, even if they were ordained in one way or the other. And so we must adhere to supplication, for as it is said in another tradition, ad-du'a, supplication, these prayers are the weapons of a believer, the weapons of a mu'min. So always remember to supplicate to Allah and know from the depths of your heart, mind, and soul that Allah is most surely listening. This is Dialogue, Imam al-Kadhim, alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program Dialogue. I'm Attar, the producer of this program, and at this moment I invite you to listen to a short speech by Sheikh Abbas Mirza about Imam Musa al-Kadhim alayhi salam.
Harun Rashid was trying to check where is the Imam. You know, he's in this zindan, in this prison of dark well down underneath. He couldn't really trace the Imam. The guard said, you know, gaze, look very carefully. Do you see that? He says, yes, it's just a cloth. He says, no, that's not the cloth. But that is the Imam doing sajda. And he has gone so fragile. He has gone so thin that Harun Rashid thought it's just a cloth. The amount of zulm that Imam have gone through in these prisons are really indescribable. One cannot really describe. As we see that Imam have trained great scholars, Hisham ibn Hakam, a great theologian, you know, who was very young and who was, you know, taken as under the wing of the Imam and was trained by the Imam. Then you have Yahya ibn Akhtin, another scholar you know, who was trained, Yahya was also trained. And many of them were planted within the ministry with the execution of taqiyya. Imam have asked them to do taqiyya and to be in the ministry and support the followers of Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, because the intensity upon the Sadat, upon the Sayyids, upon the followers were so strong, as was so powerful, that they were persecuted, that there was embargo, you know. And as you know, that the Sahm Sadat that is seen in fiqh from Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam points out to that embargo, that sanction against the Sayyids that were taking place. They were not given jobs, they were not given permission to buy lands and plots, and they were secluded and persecuted. Then at least through this means that they will be, you know, aided. You have the element of the Sahm Sadat being introduced during that period of the sixth iman, that we find immense amount of riwayat and traditions.
For listening to this episode of Dialogue, don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com/en. Call of Islam page, where you can find all of our previous programs and many others as well. Until another episode, fi amanillah, and God bless you all.
Cultural news, social news, scientific news, artistic news. With the light.
Scaling Mount Everest is only a dream for many and a once-in-a-lifetime achievement for most professional mountaineers. Well, not for this Nepali Sherpa, who has now repeated the feat for a record 26th time. 52-year-old Kami Rita led a group of other Sherpa climbers along the traditional Southeast Ridge route to the world's tallest peak. In the process, he beat his own previous record set last year. Rita first scaled Everest in 1994 and has been making the trip nearly every year since then. The Sherpa community is an ethnic group indigenous to the Himalayan region. They are expert mountain navigators who also carry heavy loads. Everest stands nearly 9,000 meters above sea level. The mountain has been climbed more than 10,000 times since it was first scaled in 1953. The bad news is more than 300 people have died trying. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Kumalangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Kulalangma from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. It replaces the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. While some drivers are obsessed with speed, some others have a passion for the look of their cars. In Tehran, car tuning lovers have assembled for the biggest show of modified vehicles. Yusuf Jalali has the story.
Fast and furious. It's the biggest show of personal cars turned SUVs. Held in Tehran's Island Karting Track, the event brought together more than 500 motorists to flaunt their modified cars.
This is the only place where car tuning lovers can vent their energy and show off their beautiful cars. When I saw the call for such a big assembly of modified vehicles, I didn't waste a moment and decided to bring my car here.
Exhausts sound deeper, with flames popping out. Sound systems rattle the car roofs. And regular doors are replaced by butterfly doors, opening upward. To these people, car tuning is more than a hobby, but a passion. Majid says he has spent double the price of this Peugeot 206 to turn it into a green beast.
For us, our cars mean everything. To me, it's love. I save whatever I earn to spend on my car. So I urge the police to respect this love and stop fining us when we roll with our cars on the streets.
Based on Iran's traffic regulations, drivers are not allowed to alter the original design of their cars. Installing loudspeakers and noisy exhaust systems, and even attaching stickers, are associated with fines. Omid says he can't take this. He has transformed his Iranian-made car, dubbed Rana, into a whole new model, saying it looks better now on the street.
I spent whatever I could afford to make the streets look better with our cars, but the police are treating us like we are wrongdoers. I myself oppose dangerous driving in the city. What I want is just to make my car look more attractive.
Car tuning encompasses any modification to a vehicle that would lead to a higher engine performance and dynamic handling of the car. As long as these people stick to these rules, police will not have issues. Otherwise, they must keep these beauties inside their parking lots.
Thank you. However eye-catching they are, these mutated cars are no longer road pets and are good for drifting on tracks like this. Organizers say that's exactly why they held this show, to provide a chance for car tuning maniacs to vent their energy in a safe place. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
The third long-duration team of astronauts launched by SpaceX to the International Space Station, ISS, for NASA safely departed the orbiting outpost to begin their descent back to Earth, capping a six-month science mission. Live video showing the capsule drifting away from the station as the two vehicles soared high over Australia was shown on a NASA webcast. Wearing helmeted white and black spacesuits, the four astronauts were seen strapped into the crew cabin shortly before the spacecraft separated from the station, orbiting some 400 kilometers above the Earth. NASA said one of the cosmonauts, Oleg Artemyev, assumed command of the ISS from Marshburn in a handover before Thursday's undocking.
And I relinquish control of the or command of the space station to you.
I accept command. I accept command. Thank you for here. Thank you for friendship. It was unbelievable time to get.
If all goes smoothly, the crew Dragon craft dubbed Endurance will parachute into the sea off the coast of Florida on Friday. Their departure came about a week after they welcomed their replacement team aboard the station, also currently home to three Russian cosmonauts on a long-term mission. Chinese scientists are establishing a meteorological monitoring station at an altitude of 8,800 meters on Mount Komolangma, the world's highest peak on the China-Nepal border. The 13 members of the research team started the trek towards an 8,300-meter base camp on Mount Koh Lanta from a 7,028-meter camp on Tuesday morning. They reached the camp in the afternoon and went on the last section of the arduous journey up on Wednesday morning. If the station is established successfully, it will replace the one at an altitude of 8,430 meters set up by the British and U.S. scientists on the mountains in 2019. It will be the world's highest of its kind, according to the Chinese Academy of Sciences.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Iran's capital, Tehran, is hosting the country's most high-profile robotics event, dubbed RoboCup Iran Open. The event seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by holding tournaments. Yusuf Shalali has the story.
They may not be able to face human soccer players just yet, but these robot footballers are taking their baby steps toward achieving this goal. The 16th edition of RoboCup Iran Open brought together 100 teams from across the country to compete in different fields of robotics and artificial intelligence, with a focus on soccer robots.
Our robot is a soccer player that moves with its wheels. It's totally different from humanoid robots, but it can certainly challenge them and beat them in a football match.
We have taken part in the Maze League of the RoboCup games. It's the first time I'm involved in this big competition, where I have to implement all my programming, mechanics and electronics skills to win the game. I am so excited.
Organizers say RoboCup seeks to promote robotics and artificial intelligence by offering IT experts a real-time challenge to build the most capable robots.
The idea of RoboCup competitions is to increase the creativity of IT experts in developing efficient robots. Why soccer? Because first of all, it is a highly popular sport, and second, it is a highly strategic game that requires a robot to perform many difficult tasks, which, if accomplished, can turn them into strong and capable robots.
RoboCup Iran Open is part of the international initiative dubbed Robot Soccer World Cup, or shortly, RoboCup. The event was first launched in 1997 and was inspired by the victory of a computer chess player against the then world chess champion, Garry Kasparov. The official goal of the competition, as stated by its organizers, is to hone the capabilities of humanoid robot soccer players so that they will win a soccer game against the winner of the most recent FIFA World Cup in mid-21st century.
While robots still have a long way to go before they can challenge the likes of Messi and Ronaldo, the ultimate goal of RoboCup is not about robot footballers beating human rivals, but the technology advances that can be made along the way to improve our lives. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
There is a lot to be worried about when it comes to the climate. An Indian auto rickshaw driver in the capital, New Delhi, has come up with an innovative idea to beat the scorching heat wave. He has built a garden on the roof of his vehicle to keep passengers cool. Mahendra Kumar's vehicle, dubbed Moving Garden, stands out among others with its unique rooftop. He has grown vegetables, flowers and a variety of herbs and shrubs on the small roof space. Kumar says it was easy to make the garden by spreading a thick sack over a mat and covering it with soil. Then he added the plants, watered them and watched them grow.
Around 2 years ago, I had this idea during the peak of the summer season. I thought if I can grow some plants on the roof, it will keep my auto rickshaw cool and give relief from the heat to my passengers.
Kumar says the thick green keeps his three-wheeler cool even when temperatures reach 45 degrees Celsius. The rickshaw driver has also installed small fans inside for the comfort of passengers as an extra measure. His passengers say they feel cold because of the natural air conditioner. Kumar's rickshaw attracts many commuters for obvious reasons, and passers-by